Welcome back to another episode of More from Sam. Hey, Sam, it was nice seeing you a few minutes ago and seeing you again here.
Yeah, long time no see.
Yeah, we just did a Substack Live. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. It actually kind of surprised me that live still feels like something different, right? I mean, it's like, obviously the experience of looking at a camera and talking is identical, but just the knowledge that it's live and that you can't take any of your words back is somehow thrilling or gets your attention. So I like it.
We didn't give subscribers much heads up at all. We will do that in the future, but we just had thought of it at the last minute. And anyone who would like to join us for one of those in the future, you can become a subscriber and join us over there. We will give you more time. And I thought it was really cool that we were able to take some questions from the audience and do that in real time. It's a different experience being live than recording, but we'll do more of those and we'll see where we can learn and figure out how to improve those.
Yeah, it was fun. And I think we can record them. I don't know. Like in this case, I think it was just, if you were in the room, you were in the room, you know, which is frankly kind of nice, you know, to treat it like a live event as opposed to yet another podcast, you know, piece of content that we're just going to record and put out there. So, you know, I think we should give people a heads up so that they can be there if they want to be.
All right. So I woke up this morning thinking about your conversation with Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller from the Bulwark, that media empire they have. And just thinking why it was so well received by your audience. And I don't even know what their positions are on most issues, but I'm sure they're more conservative than yours. They're conservatives, correct?
You know, I don't even know where there's daylight between us in our views. I mean, yes, they you would expect there to be differences because they're both formerly Republicans, right? So they're coming from the other side. They're both gay, so that I mean, I don't know how conservative they could be socially. But
my point is, it doesn't even matter. It seems like it didn't even matter anymore. There was such a sense of relief hearing you guys speak together. It's almost like we never really cared about some of those other differences. And we've realized that now we just care about decency, decorum, sanity. Having somebody on the other side just at least see everything the same way that you see things.
Yeah. And also they're much closer to the political history there. I mean, they're just obviously having spent all their time right of center. They see how Trump and Trumpism bent everything into this awful shape. And they have relationships, they have many more relationships than I had. They got distorted by these changes. So it's great to talk to them. I'm just a huge fan of both those guys. I mean, they're just very fun.
And they're so trustworthy and likable. They just feel like, you know, listening to the three of you talk, it just felt like, you know, three of my friends were getting together. And I'm certain the audience felt the same way, that there was this FOMO. Yeah. Like, I wish I could have been there with you guys. I saw a comment on YouTube and thought this was a nice note from them. It says, as a progressive, I probably don't agree on many policy issues with Sarah and Tim, but I have come to trust them to tell it straight over almost anyone else, including most of the progressive podcasters I listen to. Mm. So I don't know. I mean, it just seems that everybody liked hearing you guys speak. Yeah. I can't help my mind thinking that there, you know, perhaps we should make this a quarterly podcast crossover event where, you know, it appears on both podcasts. I think the audiences would enjoy it. And then even putting maybe a few live dates together. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I definitely think people would like to see the three of you guys.
I think they're touring. I think they're touring right now. They're going to Minneapolis to do a live event there. I think I noticed. People should check them. I mean, they're taking their podcast on the road to some degree. So,
I am certain they are a lot of fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
So, good for them. According to the Wall Street Journal, President Donald Trump's cryptocurrency firm, World Liberty Financial, sounds so official, sold a $500 million stake to a member of the Emirati royal family shortly before his inauguration last January. Months later, the Trump administration agreed to supply the UAE with highly coveted American-made AI chips. Now, we've talked about this before. Is there anything to add with this latest information?
No, it's just as tawdry and as dangerous and as self-serving and as corrupt as anyone could have imagined, right? I mean, the crucial detail here is that we're giving chips, our most advanced chips, to the UAE that does military exercises with China. And these are chips that, precisely the chips we don't want China to have. And we're relaxing those security concerns because Trump and his family managed to get hundreds of millions, arguably billions in the transaction. You know, so what's wrong with that? You know, if you pretended to care that Hunter Biden got some money, serving on a board in Ukraine that he was not qualified to serve on because of the name association with Joe Biden, and you thought maybe even Joe Biden, in the worst case scenario, got some of that money, and you're looking at those emails, and when they say 10% to the big guy, you thought, oh, that's a smoking gun. How awful. Let's just destroy this guy's presidency and burn everything down because of how corrupt and unseemly this is. You're that person who cares about the integrity of our politics to that fine degree. Hunter Biden is, and his grifting are intolerable. And yet now, magically, go look in the mirror, see how much you care about a president who's managed to extract billions of dollars over the course of months by materially undermining the leadership role and military preparedness and actual safety of our country on the world stage, right? I mean, just like everything, our alliances have eroded, all of these tariffs, whether you believe that he's earned $1 billion or $4 billion, depending on whose estimate you trust at this point, he has just sold out our country every which way he could so as to profit and to have his family and friends profit.
I know we keep talking about AI, but it seems like the timelines keep moving up daily. I want you to watch this clip from the CEO of Microsoft AI in a recent interview with the Financial Times. Let's play that clip for Sam.
You talk about superintelligence. Most of your rivals talk about AGI, artificial general intelligence. Explain the difference between AGI and superintelligence.
I prefer the definition that focuses first on what would it take to build a system that could achieve most of the tasks that a regular professional in a workplace goes about on a daily basis. Think of it as a professional grade AGI.
How close are we?
I think that we're going to have a human level performance on most, if not all, professional tasks. So white collar work where you're sitting down at a computer, either being, a lawyer or an accountant or a project manager or a marketing person, most of those tasks will be fully automated by an AI within the next 12 to 18 months. And we can see this in software engineering. Many software engineers report that they are now using AI-assisted coding for the vast majority of their code production, which means that their role shifted now to this meta function of debugging, scrutinizing, of doing the strategic stuff like architecting of, et cetera, putting things into production. So it's a quite different relationship to the technology. And that's happened in the last 6 months.
What do you make of that?
Well, so I know Mustafa a little bit, a very nice guy. And obviously he's very close to this work. I mean, he came from DeepMind. He was one of the founders of DeepMind and moved over to Microsoft. So I think his prognostications are probably as credible as anybody's at this point. You know, it's pretty alarming when you think of the societal implications. If in a year we have the complete cancellation of the need for human cognition of the white collar type, that's I don't know how many people that is, but it's a lot of people, and it's basically surely most of the high status jobs, right? I mean, one of the ironies and surprises here is that the robots are coming for the lawyers and doctors and software engineers before they're coming for the janitors and massage therapists and nurses and plumbers. And so if you went to college and incurred $200,000 in debt and that degree enabled you to get to the rung on the ladder where you're currently standing, it's very likely that part of the ladder is in the process of disappearing, right? And the entire ladder, I mean, Mustafa's saying that the ladder itself is evaporating. So what he's saying now is in principle already true of the bottom rung of many of these ladders, right? So like everyone in a hiring position at virtually any company, media company, tech company, whatever, marketing, et cetera. Everyone's, when they're thinking about new hires, the prospect of having to hire a 21-year-old coming out of college, the first question they're asking themselves is this even a job? Can't we use AI for this thing, right? Can't somebody who's already working for us figure out how to use AI to do this thing? Do we really need this guy coming out of college? So that's already happening. You have to think, and I don't know when that's going to show up in the labor statistics.
Well, if he's saying 12 to 18 months, I mean, you seem entirely too calm about this. I mean, maybe we just can't get our head around just looking around and seeing at least 50% of the people that we know have no jobs.
No, I'm not calm about it. I just see clearly we're going to have to, I don't know if it's UBI or some other remedy, but we are going to have to figure out how to share the wealth, right? It's totally untenable to live in a world where you get you know, a few founders or a dozen founders or 20 founders or, you know, 100 founders who become stratospherically wealthy, and then a cohort below them who also get absurdly wealthy. And then you've got this sort of race, it's almost like this fall of Saigon moment where the kind of the last person who can grasp the, you know, the foot rails of a helicopter gets out. So like you, what you're going to have are some of the people who jump on the last, they get the last job, right? You know, it's like the last hire at all these companies before the robots, you know, fully take over. And then there's going to kind of be a winnowing of existing jobs from there. It's totally untenable. We need to anticipate this. If it's only 18 months from now or a year from now, we should be anticipating it right now. How do we absorb this? If you're founding a company that's going to become a multi-billion dollar company and it's going to have one employee, right? What should be happening there? Like, does the public get equity in any of these companies, right? I mean, like, if you've created a company that obviates the need for human labor, not just in your company, but across dozens of other companies, we'd need to create some mechanism by which the wealth gets shared, right?
Well, speaking of that, are you familiar with California's wealth tax proposal? And do you think that's the way to address it? Or do we need something more on a national level, I would think?
Well, that's clearly not a way to address it, because there you have the perverse incentives of, you know, just people leaving the state, right? You know, you're going to drive the tech industry to Texas or Florida or some other place that wouldn't pass a law like that. So you need to get the incentives right. If the punchline is we will one day be in a world where human labor is optional at best and just fundamentally not necessary, right? If that's what success looks like, you know, we build machines that can do everything better than we can, it all becomes like chess, all the way down to the plumbers and the janitors and the mechanics and people who work with their hands, right? I mean, the robots will come eventually, but before that, you know, we'll have the agents that can do everything that you can do sitting at a desk. We have to anticipate that, right? Like, so that should be good news, right? It should usher in abundance and wealth and leisure, and we should be able to make the most of that situation. But we have to anticipate the transition from where we are now to that. I mean, this leaves aside all the other ways AI could harm us. This is all just the good stuff. We're just talking about productivity gains. We're talking about one person who can suddenly do the work of 1,000 because they can spin up 1,000 agents. And all of a sudden, one person is a, you know, can start multiple companies in an hour, you know, while still running their law firm, right? You know, and they fired all their associates and all their paralegals because they didn't need them anymore, because the robots do all that stuff better. Okay, if Mustafa's right, and that's the world we'll be in very soon, we have to figure out politically, we have to figure out how to share that success. I mean, again, that's what success looks like. That's not one of the failure modes that we also have to worry about. That's not having our robot arsenal hacked by China and turned against us, right? That's not, you know, cyber terrorism that shuts out the lights on entire societies. That's not an AI engineered virus that, you know, makes the stock market disappear for 2 weeks and nobody knows how much money they have, right? Like, it's none of the bad stuff. This is all good stuff, which is also an emergency.
Yeah. Tom Homan said yesterday that Trump has agreed with his proposal to end federal immigration enforcement in Minnesota. Do you think this indicates a change in policy? I know we were talking about Damon Linker's piece a couple of weeks ago when he was concerned about what should we do. It seems something happened.
Mm. Well, I do think they have pivoted in response to all of the public outrage, right? So they recognize it to be politically untenable, at least that moment in Minnesota. I mean, I don't think there's a change in Stephen Miller's brain, right? I mean, that's the relevant real estate you have to think about when you're talking about a change in actual policy for the administration. I don't think he's changing his views anytime soon. So I think we're still being led by maniacs, but now Homan is putting a more professional and cautious face on the policy. So I don't know what to expect in the future, but I do think the build out of ICE is sinister and something we should worry about.
Did you catch the Super Bowl halftime performance by Bad Bunny? And what did you think about Turning Point USA producing their own halftime show?
Oh, I just caught a second. I mean, I caught much of Bad Bunny's performance because my daughters wanted to see that, and I was being led by them at that point, which I did not understand the controversy around that. But I think I just caught a very short clip of the Turning Point USA retort to it. And that's, yeah, I mean, I just think the whole thing, that the controversy around any of that is embarrassing, and the counter-programming is also embarrassing. I mean, it's just not, it shouldn't be a thing.
It seems like every day we need something new to fight about.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite halftime performance other than Prince's that's been auto-selected for you by the team already? any second favorite?
You know, I'm such a an inconsistent watcher of Super Bowls that there's not that many I can name. I mean, the previous year, who's the rapper who did last year's Super
Kendrick
Bowl?
Kendrick Lamar? I don't even know.
Yeah, I think it was Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah.
I watched that with my daughters too, and that was very well done. I mean, that was just impressive. I forget, there was some controversy around that too, though. Wasn't he calling out some other rapper?
Drake, right?
Okay,
Drake,
yeah. He was savaging Drake there. So yeah, again, these are details that I'm basically blind and deaf to as I consume these cultural products.
Yeah, I think he called Drake a pedo. I'm not sure. If you had to put yourself in one category, you tuning in for the game, the commercials, or the halftime show? Or none of it?
It would either be the commercials or the game. I mean, occasionally I tune in for the game, just, you know, it's often the only football game I've watched that year. So I'm really not an avid sports fan, but, you know, football is a sport that I ignore more than most. But I do often watch the game or much of the game. And also I notice the commercials. But this time I saw almost none of the game, none of the commercials, and only the halftime show. So I broke that pattern. But normally, the halftime show is not the thing I'm thinking about.
All right, let's get to the lightning round.
Okay.
Spielberg has a new movie coming out later this year called Disclosure Day. Leaving aside whether there is life somewhere out there, do you think there is or ever was non-human life on Earth?
No, I think I am agnostic as to whether or not there is advanced life elsewhere in the galaxy or the cosmos, but it seems extraordinarily unlikely to me that it's ever visited Earth, if it exists.
Well, then who built the pyramids, Sam? Mm,
yeah. Well, some very strong Egyptians.
And Jews, no? Didn't they do it?
Yes, well, and some very strong Jews.
Yes. You're not a Valentine's Day guy, are you? We've got Valentine's Day coming up.
Not much of one. I mean, occasionally I convince myself that I should do something or regret not having done something, but we tend not to take Valentine's Day very seriously.
It reminds me of the last time you said that you saw Hitchens.
Oh yeah, I had Valentine's Day dinner with Hitchens one year. That's right, I do remember that.
Yeah, that's a funny story.
But yes,
reportedly over 100 C-17 military aircraft are on their way to the Middle East. Apparently, these are the same levels as Desert Storm. Hmm. It seems the Iranian people are ready for regime change and believe that with the U.S. intervention, that they are ready to be the boots on the ground. Do you have any thoughts on this? Something has to be happening.
You know, I really don't. I mean, I'm quite humbled by the history of our misadventures in the Middle East, right? So like the idea that we are going to do something good there by invading in any, you know, like actually having our boots on the ground in any way, that worries me. But I am a fan of doing whatever we can to destabilize this regime and letting the Iranian people create whatever aftermath they can create. I mean, and whether that is air power or air power plus special forces, or I mean, I don't know the details of what we could accomplish there and how we would do it, but I would be surprised if anyone's thinking about a real invasion of Iran. I mean, that would be surprising. I haven't heard anyone think that that's what we're going to do.
So what are you doing? Well, it may be on the ground, but what are you doing with all those planes over there? Something
I have no idea, but I just think we should help them, and wrecking that regime is very likely the necessary piece, right? I mean, like the guys who come into the streets with guns and turn those guns on their own people who are protesting, those guys need to be disarmed or, you know, otherwise disempowered or killed, right? I mean, like the regime thugs, you know, we should fight those guys, but obviously we should do it in a way that minimizes our footprint, you know, because we understand. I honestly think Iran is much less likely to blow back on us the way Iraq and Afghanistan did. I mean, I just think a majority of the people are in a different spot with their kind of their desperation to be rid of theocracy, right? It's a much more sophisticated culture that has been oppressed for now more than a generation. You can't say that about Afghanistan, right? You can't even say that about Iraq, and Iraq was more sophisticated than Afghanistan. So I do think it's a different situation. It's like, if you're going to talk about the prospect of nation building, is probably, ironically, this is probably a good opportunity that we can't possibly take, given how bad our experience was, you know, previously. But I think it's worth assuming that the majority of the Iranian people want something like a secular democracy, or something, you know, something that would be recognizably secular and democratic. One could never have assumed that about Afghanistan, though we tried, and so it was also the case with Iraq.
I know you got to run, but I just want to hit you with one more topic. America's population wasn't expected to start falling until 2081. Trump's immigration crackdown means it could happen as soon as this year. Mm. Based on at least one respected estimate, 2026 may be the first real population decline in American history.
Mm. Wow, I hadn't heard that.
I know that Peter Zion has talked in the past about saying that the U.S. would fare much better due to our immigration mm-hmm. and our ability to attract immigrants. What do you think he'd be thinking right now if that...
It's a policy we can change, right? If we notice that this is really not good and we need more people, we can presumably still attract those people by changing our policy and changing our government or our representatives in the near future. So I don't think it's a permanent condition, but yeah, that doesn't seem ideal.
No. All right. Well, that might be a problem that can be fixed more easily. All right. Thanks to everyone who submitted questions. If you'd like to help with this show in the future, you can head over to Sam's page on Substack, submit questions, and participate in the online community. And again, we will we'll do more of those lives. I think that was a lot of fun. So if you want to be a subscriber, head over to samharris.org/subscribe and become a subscriber, or you can subscribe at Substack as well and join us for those. That's all for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time.
Thanks, everybody.